There's been concern that the nation's food supply could become a target of terrorism, especially since food never has been less local. Food, on average, travels 1,300 miles before reaching dinner tables. The impact of globalization on food moved one Arizona ecologist to experiment with eating locally. He talked with NPR's Ketzel Levine.
Before writing his new book, Coming Home to Eat, Gary Nabhan was already an impressive gardener. He was co-founder of Native Seeds Search, a group that saved thousands of desert plants from extinction, and his work won him a prestigious MacArthur Fellowship. But as a longtime resident of Arizona with an ethnobotanist's feel for the state's bounty, it was his longing for ancient culinary melodies that finally stirred Nabhan to this challenge. Spend a year eating plants and animals that were native within 250 miles of his Tucson home, and that's native before European colonization.
Peppery beans, mezcal, amaranth, prickly pear, a variety of food crops that are incredibly nutritious and tasty, but don't get marketed beyond our region much.
But before you started this experiment, I take it that your cupboards had some less than local products in them, and I wonder if you'd be kind enough to read an excerpt from your book about your kitchen cabinet before you began eating locally.
Oh, that embarrassing moment. Okay. Like most kitchen cabinets I have known, ours was filled with many cans and boxes that had not been opened since their purchase months before. If you think exposing your underwear drawer to the public would be embarrassing, imagine what it would be like giving a tour of your pantry to all the food activists and farm reform folks you've ever known. As I opened the cabinet, a box of Betty Crocker's Pudding in the Mix, super moist, white cake mix, fell out onto the counter.
So you begin to clean out the larder and you make decisions about what you will and won't eat and where it'll come from. You also supplemented your diet with food provided by a lot of people in the area who you didn't know before you started this.
It was really a remarkable journey to just find neighbors who shared common interest and common tastes, heartwarming people all around me that I never knew before who were involved with these foods.
It seemed like you were on a treasure hunt, not simply for the food, but meeting all these people along the way, particularly when you met the family who made your own mesquite flour tortillas. Would you read the excerpt when you taste the first one?
This is when I first purchased some hot mesquite tortillas from a neighbor at a corner on a highway where we met once a week. I got back into the old blazer and opened up one of the bags. The unmistakable aroma of mesquite wafted into the air, filling the entire cab with its bouquet. I took out one tortilla and ate it. It was sweet and smoky, like a Grandma Moses painting, a homemade masterpiece. I tenderly cradled these first warm bags, the first evidence that an ancient desert food had been revived in my own neighborhood.
That seemed to happen to you a lot, this discovery that things that you thought were previously lost were in fact in your own backyard.
That's right. I think more and more people around me did share interest in these foods and had kept sort of an underground economy to keep these foods alive. And it's the kind of foods that you can find anywhere in swap meets and flea markets and bake sales. Special foods that don't have barcodes on them, but always have wonderful stories that go along with them.
Well, in many ways, you created, quite literally, your own community of locally grown food providers. And this was a full-time commitment on your part. I'm wondering how hard you think it would be for the average hardworking urban dweller, for instance, to do it. Would it even be possible?
You know, it sounds like a gargantuan task to get 80% of your calories from local sources. But there's two parts of the story that surprised me. One, that it hardly took any more time for me to garden than it would take for me to go 30 miles into the nearest big grocery store. And so I had a lot more time at home to explore what was in the wildlands in my neighborhood, like yucca blossoms and mesquite pods, and to tend my own garden. The second part of it is that I'm not really a old style back to the lander who never goes anywhere. I'm on the road a lot, and so I did a lot of my foraging while I was on the road, including picking up roadkills.
I was actually going to ask you if you'd eaten any good roadkill, but I hadn't meant it seriously. But did you eat any good roadkill?
I sure did. I ate a number of rattlesnakes that taste just like chicken, believe it or not.
You did seem to have an awfully good time during this year of eating locally. I mean, the book is peppered with all of these foraging trips and food parties and pit roasts and caterpillar hunts.
But, you know, for as wide-ranging as my diet got, I would say that 90% of these foods are as palatable, if not more palatable, than the things that I could get at the local Quick Mart. It just was probably horrifying for the first few months to my family and friends to think that I was always going to sneak something like rattlesnake into the bean burritos just to sort of keep them disoriented.
Gary Nabhan is now the director of the Center for Sustainable Environments at Northern Arizona University. Taking the job meant moving from Tucson to Flagstaff, but his love of local food has not changed. What he's lost in backyard prickly pears, which he swears taste just like green beans, he's gained in prehistoric species of sunflowers, irrefutable proof of the sustenance still growing in our own backyards. For NPR News, I'm Ketzel Levine.
There's more on eating locally on Ketzel's website, Talking Plants at npr.org. This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Bob Edwards.